Nope.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate you being on. We really do. We want you to know that. We're working on, man, I tell you, we are. Have you ever seen, you ever been jinxed? Have you ever been jinxed?
No, that means we're doing something good and principalities is just in our way. Yeah,
that's exactly what's happening. We got a plug that ain't working to help us get on to Blog Talk. And so we're working on that. So you stick with us. Let's try. We can't unplug that. So we're trying. Okay, let me just keep the show going while Gil tries to get our computer going. It's all ready to go. It just needs to get plugged up. We're talking about, once again, we wanted to finish what we're talking about, which was black boys and the importance and the value of what, how we can save their lives.
Is there anything that we don't need?
You asking, is there anything we don't need?
Yeah, but like the printer.
Yeah, we don't need the printer. You can unplug the printer. So we're trying to figure out what to unplug so we can plug this computer in and get everybody on the air live. You're listening to Mad Dad's Blog Talk Radio, and I have never in my life seen anything that happens every Tuesday at exactly the same time, the madness and craziness that happens. But this is what happens to us. Every Tuesday we have an issue. So what we're doing is continuing the conversation about black boys. And one of the facts that we know about black boys is that they are more likely to be put on dangerous psychiatric medications for emotional problems, while white boys are more likely to receive valuable psychotherapy for the cause of their behavior problems, which comes with no side effects. And we have found this to be true between African-Americans especially, and the doctors that recommend them to go on psychotic drugs. Those drugs have permanent damage, and sometimes our young black men don't come out of that after effects and side effects of permanent damage. I was looking at a young man the other day that kept twitching his neck, and I was wondering why he did that. And he said that when he was at schools, that he was told that in order for him to stay in the school, that he would need to go on to these drugs to make him able to perform better and to listen to the teachers. But what he said was that not only did the drugs not really help him, but the sad fact is that those drugs actually made him so he wasn't getting any education, because he was unable to get the proper education that he needed, because when he took those drugs, he kind of spaced out, kind of left the camp, or so to speak, kind of checked out, and he had no ability to really perform as a student or to learn, and so he stopped taking the medication, which then caused him to go back to his normal behavior, which was not a good behavior for the teachers in the school, because they could not relate to him. We have so many teachers that just can't relate to our kids, can't relate to us, can't relate to the community even, and have no desire to relating to the community. And so what we're trying to do now, as you can hear Gil really working hard to get our computer back up, and I appreciate that, but what we're trying to do now is figure out what are the solutions, and that's why I'm so glad people are calling in, because when we get our computer back up, okay, looks like we almost got it here. You can tell when the light was on. I think we got some kind of short. Is the light on? We got some shortness, so I'm trying to keep talking to you. I want to remind you, if you listen to Blog Talk Radio, We meet every Tuesday at every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Write this address down because I want you to stop by and come by and see the work that we're doing, the fine work that we're doing. 3023 4th Avenue South is where we meet. That's 3023 4th Avenue South. And I want you to come by there and have a meal with us and be a part of what we're doing, be a part of the program, be a part of the work that we do, the fine work that we do in the community. Mr. Gil Baggett has gotten it back. Yeah, he got us back on, and we're going to be back on the computer in just a second. Gil, what I was just talking about was the fact that black boys are more likely to be put on dangerous psychotic medications.
Well, you know, that's true, VJ, because I experienced myself, and now this is during the early 60s, during when Ritalin first came out.
Uh-huh.
And it was a behavior modification drug.
Okay.
And, you know, by me, you know, being hyperactive at school, I was always the class clown. I was always seeking, you know, negative recognition and stuff like that there. You know, I was disruptive to the classroom and stuff like that. And the people that I had to talk to and stuff and saying were not people I could identify with, you know. I don't want to sound prejudiced because I'm not, but I just want to be factual and realistic when I'm trying to get the people to understand is that it was always some suburbanite white teacher that was trying to appeal to my most sensible side, you know what I'm saying, like my responsible side. And, you know, and she didn't understand it, you know, that I was coming from a dysfunctional home. She didn't understand that I was coming from an abusive home. She didn't understand, you know, that I was coming to school half time, half sleep. I was coming to school half hungry half the time and stuff like that. So I had a lot of other social issues and stuff that I was dealing with at a time when I had no one else to lay up here and talk to about these problems, you know. So when I came to school and stuff, school was like a relief where I could come and stuff and stand, be with other people and stuff.
Right.
But I didn't have any social skills, you know what I'm saying? I didn't have the social etiquette that the other kids had because I wasn't trained, I wasn't taught like that, you know. You know, like my response to everything was, you know, hit it, kick it, stomp it, beat it, because that's the type of environment I was raised in. You know, so anytime I had any type of social conflicts or anything like that, or social confrontations and stuff, I didn't have the tools necessary for me to lay up here and make positive choices. You know, I was, my whole immediate reaction was to hit it. You know what I'm saying? My reaction was to be verbally abusive and stuff like that. So, as you were saying, that we have our children today often is different schools and stuff that's, you know, racially divided on the strength that you have a teacher coming from another environment to a urban environment where you have so many different social issues that these kids are dealing with, even walking to school, even going to school on the buses, coming to school on the buses and stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's a challenge for most kids, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, see, like, you know, we already acknowledge the fact that we're dealing with the residue of this drug epidemic that has affected our communities for so many years. We have teenage pregnancies. We have mothers and stuff now that their child is 13 years old and the mother's 20. You know what I mean? Not that young.
Right.
Mother's 22, 23 years old. So, you know, with the mindset that you can't nobody tell my child anything. I don't want nobody, you know, like when we was coming up, you know, the teachers had the go-ahead from our parents to discipline us right there in the classroom.
That's right.
You know, so, but now we have a confrontational mentality with these young mothers and stuff. They don't want nobody telling their children anything. And that's a bad message for you to send your child to school, is that can't nobody tell them nothing.
It's a terrible message.
It is a terrible message.
You know, one of the things is that I found out that mothers think that it's okay to put their kids on Ritalin and all these other different drugs because they can't get them to calm down either because daddy's not in the home.
Amen. And, you know, that's one of the biggest focal points of the challenge that we face here at Mad Dads and at Urban Ventures is that we're confronting the parents. We're trying to – see, people don't understand that this is a movement that we're on. See, a lot of people just see us and they just think that we are community representatives and stuff like this here, but this is a cultural revolution that we're on. We're trying to reinvest our resources back in re-educating parents on how to be parents. And one of the main factors that we have that is really holding us back is that the lack of fathers in the child's life. Because we know through statistics that fatherless children, I mean, that's active fathers that are not actively involved in the social development and the educational development of their children, the financial support of their children, the emotional support of their children, are the ones that's in prisons, the ones that drop up out of high school, the ones that return to prostitution, the ones that become strippers in those clubs. All these negative activities and stuff that you can say is bringing down our communities and stuff is all rooted in that fathers are absent from their children's lives.
And when a father is absent, there's just strictly no way for a young man to learn. There's certain things that you have to learn.
That's right.
And I think that a lot of women get real defensive when you say your boy needs a daddy. You know that?
Yeah, they do. I'm his daddy, and I'm his mama and his daddy. Not true.
Yeah, it's just not possible for you to do everything. Come on, I know y'all super women. I know you do your best.
Amen.
But we need these men to be accountable for their kids. We need these men to be in their lives. And some women make it impossible for fathers to be fathers. We have a lot of fathers that want to be daddies, that want to be a part of, that want to be in their kids' lives, but aren't able to do that because they're not allowed to do it. And so we need, mothers, we need y'all to stop doing that. We really do. Because it's affecting the kids. It may not affect you because you're mad, you'll get a new man. But that kid cannot get a new daddy.
That is so true. And, you know, I had an interesting conversation with a young woman today. And, you know, she was telling me how she was tired of being by herself and that she sought out a relationship with a fella, and that this guy here, you know, he was irresponsible, and you know that you know he was not a good person, and she brought this guy into her life.
No book.
She had brought this guy into her life and stuff, you know, and how it had adversely affected her relationship with her family. And so I was like, you know, here it is, you know, we find ourselves doing this all the time. We get in these relationships with these people and stuff, and we looking for one thing, which is just social entertainment. And then we try to turn that social entertainment into the responsibility of fatherhood, and it don't work. A lot of these guys are just not ready, you know?
No, they're not ready, but then they want to see the baby, but they don't want to help. You know, so I understand. We see it all the time. Everybody wants to get their child support reduced. Even if it's $50 a month, I need to get that reduced.
Yeah.
And what can a baby do with $50 a month?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's just be real about it. What really can a baby do with $50 a month? But if your check ain't but $100, then you can't do much either. We got callers on the line, man. I'm so glad that we just got it straight. We just got on the line. We've got somebody who's been on the line for 13 minutes.
Amen.
And that phone number is 8339. We're going to check in. How you doing? And welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, VJ. Hey, Gil. How's it going?
Hey, Brandon. What's up, good buddy?
Hey. I was just listening in to some of the stuff y'all was talking about, and also I got some good news. I'm going to be going to Job Corps next Tuesday, so...
Hey!
Yeah, a lot of stuff is going on with my life, and just thanking God for everything.
Well, you know, one of the things is, man, Job Corps is a great thing to do, a great place to be. It teaches you about how to be an adult and take care of your own business.
Right.
And one of the things that Brandon, we're going to ask you to do, man, is just be open, be honest, be true to this thing, man, and, you know, really work hard at being the kind of man that you know God wants you to be.
Right.
Yeah, Brandon, then you have to understand, too, man, you know, you got the power of your own destiny in your hands, man. So you got to remember your circle of friends. You know what I'm saying? And you are bright and intelligent. You are an intelligent, you're an industrious young man, man. You know what I'm saying? You got good, and you got a lot of futuristic plans, man. And all you got to do is surround yourself with guys who think like you think. You know what I'm saying?
And if you surround
yourself with guys who think like you do, man, I'm telling you that struggle is not going to be that hard, man, because it's going to become an adventure. You know what I'm saying? You know, because you know what you're going out there to do. All you got to do now, man, I'm saying, is make those preparational steps and then just stay on that path, man. You know?
Yep.
So, I'm all my prayers are going to be with you. I hope you stay in contact with us, man, and give us a couple of monthly reports, whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? And if you ever need somebody to reach out and talk to, man, you know, hey, man, remember Mad Dads, man, you know?
Yep.
That's right. That's right, because we got you there. We brought you there, and we're going to keep you there.
Right. And I'll see y'all tonight.
Okay, bro.
Okay, looking forward to seeing you, man. That's Brandon. He's going to be doing some things, and we're excited about that. We got another caller here. The caller's number, we're going to see if they want to talk. Your number is 1111. Caller, you on the line? How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. How you doing?
I was just listening.
You got a good phone number.
Yeah, you got. We like that number you got. That 1111.
I'm number one.
You're number one for real.
You are the one. Well, thanks for that. We're gonna let you listen in some more. Thanks for listening. We sure appreciate it. We got another caller here. 5270 that has checked in. How you doing? And welcome to Mad Dad's Blog Talk Radio. How you doing? Are you there?
We hear you breathing.
Yeah, we can hear you breathing, but we're going to put you back on hold because you are listening to Blog Talk Radio with Mad Dad. You know, one of the things that we also found out that the war on drugs, this is a fact, the war on drugs has been a war on black men and has served to destroy the black community and strip it of its most valuable resource, which is its men.
Amen. But VJ, man, you know, that's what, you know, the Bible tells us, man. The Bible tells us that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and weaknesses and high places and stuff. And if you break that down off into the respective realities that we exist in our communities today, we can lay up here and say that statistic that you just read is a very, very factual statistic. Because we know that in order for years, the black man in America has been up under attack for centuries. You know, our black cultures have been up under attack, you know what I'm saying? Our black heritage has been up under siege and stuff. We understand, man, you know, that the principalities that exist that wants to lay up in seat of the downfall of this of our race in this country has been prominent and very, very, very active in their attack against us. So when you lay up in, you put off drugs off into a community, you know, you know the devastation of that product that you're putting there. You know, that's just like now they recalling what they recalling tomato paste,
mm-hmm.
saying that, and they all that baby food they done put off into our community and stuff. Now they say it's got arsenic in it. You know, so we come to find out that what the Indians went through when they took over this country, that we're being victimized by that as we speak. You know. So that is an activist statement there, man, you know, that you have, once you let them, you take the men out of the house, you know, you make it uncomfortable for men there. I remember back in when I was coming up and when my mother was on welfare, my father used to have to hide in the closet or he had to go out on the back porch and sit up on the second floor, you know what I'm saying, until a welfare lady left out, you know what I'm saying? She go through the drawers and stuff like that to see if she found any adult underwear and socks and shirts and stuff in the closet and stuff like that, you know?
So I'm looking at the way that when you used to watch the news a lot, they'd always show, you know, they bust a crack house or they found, you know, pounds of marijuana and it would always be people that look like us.
Always.
And then the guys that were dropping those shipments off, you never would see those people.
Yeah, amen.
And or if you did see them, they were in court and they worked out a deal.
Yeah. They was in three-piece suits. You know what I'm saying? Had $100,000 lawyers.
And they would work out a deal to where they would get probation.
Yeah.
And then they made it so their hands never touched dope.
That's right. What's that dude, Ralph Lauren? No, not Ralph Lauren. What's the one with the stainless steel car? The one that got busted with all the drugs.
Right.
All that cocaine, whatever his name was. And he was a millionaire himself, but he was using cocaine to lay up in and finance his auto business. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, these things, I was watching the documentary on the television the other night, and they had about those gangs and stuff that was in El Salvador and all this in South America and stuff. And they had all these poor people. They say they had a war on drugs. And they had all these poor people living in these ghettos and stuff. When the documentary came on, they showed all these kids just rushing through the garbage trying to find food and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
They were living in these cardboard shacks and things and stuff, you know what I'm saying? And these put up rackety houses and stuff like this. And they had $1 million worth of machinery and vehicles and manpower. And they was just going through these small ghettos and stuff, rounding up all the people and stuff, saying that they're having an active presence in the war against drugs. But then they got the dude that called himself the drug czar,
mm-hmm.
that's producing all this stuff. He was living up in a villa up in the hills. And they wasn't going up there messing with him.
Wow.
You know?
No, they're not going to mess with him, and they're not going to mess with certain people because they need people to do the kind of things they need to do. Folks are calling in. A lady just called in and said she called in, but she got something called CubeSmart. You might have dialed the wrong number. Try that again. It's the guest calling number is 347-215-9262. You know, it's kind of interesting. We went to a school, me and Gil, the other day, and we talked to about 15 or 20 girls, and none of them had fathers.
None of them. It was amazing, wasn't it?
None of them had fathers, and it was depressing. It was depressing because they do have fathers, but they don't know either who they are or they're not in their lives. That was a lot of girls. That would have never happened in the 60s.
No.
That would have never happened in the 70s.
No.
But it's happening now where more and more kids don't know who their fathers are. And I think it's important for us to figure out what we can do about that. And that's why this talk is, how do we save our black boys? How do we do it? What do we have to do, Gil?
Well, we have to make a genuine sacrifice, you know, because, like, you know, having, you know, having been a part of the baby boomers, the high expectation babies and stuff that was born in the 50s and stuff, you know, and they had all these great expectations of what America was going to become. We were just entering the technology field, you know what I'm saying? We just put a man, John Glenn, to orbit the Earth for what? 20-some, 40-some, 50-time rotations around the planet and stuff like that. So America was in a state of euphoria. And in that state of euphoria, we kind of lost our perspective. You know what I'm saying? We lost our identity as who we were. You know, they said about something about, you know, we are a part of a lost generation. They said these kids are part of a lost generation. I think we laid up and we dropped the ball in the 70s and in the 80s, we dropped the ball because we got to partying a little bit too much, you know. It was too much money out there, you know what I'm saying? A lot of us was coming. We were first generational cotton pickers and first generational, you know what I'm saying, sharecroppers and stuff. And we was just starting to lay up here and open up the doors, Martin Luther King Freedom Marches. They had just opened up the doors for us to go off into higher education and stuff like this here and stuff. And we had these large expectations and stuff, you know what I'm saying? We're going through the Black Panther era and stuff, but we was like demanding our rights and stuff like that. And then I think that we all got caught up in that individual concept of individuality. You know, that we lost out with that when we, but that in the 80s came when we started doing, what was it called,
free love,
the free love thing and stuff, man. We bought off into that. Then we bought off into the partying aspect and stuff, you know what I'm saying? And then
the Superfly, man,
and the disco era and all that stuff. We were just having fun. Money was flowing. The auto industry was on the top of its game and stuff like that there and stuff. You can walk out your door anytime and get you a job and stuff like that. So we all bought off into the materialistic aspect of society and stuff. And we weren't looking into that we at one time was going to have children because everybody, you look at everybody in the 70s and stuff like that, we start having our babies, man, saying in the 80s.
That's right.
We start having our babies in the early 90s. You know what I'm saying? And at that time, we it had kicked in on us and stuff, just saying that we had to provide for these things.
That's right. That's
you
right.
Know?
And well, one of the things I know that's true is that we, and I'm getting ready to take this caller in just a second and call in, but we have what we've done through the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s, we've neglected the black family.
That's right, the nucleus. The nucleus of our survival.
And then we complain why the Somalians got all this stuff going on, why the Mexicans got all this going on. I was just with an Asian, and he said, you know what? He says, in 20 years, we'll be like the black community. He says, because a kid takes on the last name of the father. And now they've got women, young girls, with four babies, each one Yang, Wang, Mang, and Kang, you know. And these are all babies without fathers.
Okay.
And it hasn't hit them yet. They used to look at us and say, why are they like that? And now they're looking at themselves, the Asian family, and saying, why are the men leaving their wives?
It's part of the American dream.
So it's happening. We're going to take a caller, saving our black boys on you're from a 651 number, 2358. How you doing? And thanks for calling. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking with VJ Smith and Gil Baggett with Mad Dads.
Hello, VJ. It's Sweet Vex calling in. I'm at home on my lunch break.
Oh, man, you gave us that wonderful name, the MDs.
Right. See, you already know because I saw you at the basketball championship, the Lynx. Remember, we was getting on the escalator.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And we got a hug,
yes,
and you gave me your card. Well, you know, it's nice making connections, and I am so loving you guys and what you're doing in terms of trying to reach our community. But here's my input. First of all, you got to get a hold of these boys when they babies. And you got to stay with them. And you got to get them in things like church and Boy Scouts. And our daddy's got to quit running off from our baby. I know there's situations, strategies, and everything designed to do just that. But a woman can raise a son, but she can't provide a son with what a father can provide a son. So our black men's got to stop running away from their children. And if you don't want children, it's the responsibility of a woman and a man. Okay?
See, but
responsibility of the woman because she's left with the child. It's the responsibility of both of those people laying down and deciding they're going to have a baby and taking the necessary steps. The man can't always decide that she better bring up the concept of using a condom. That's got to be a mature conversation between two people. It's a lot of issues.
Here's what we got a problem with. Here's what we have a problem with. When a man thinks he wants to do like his daddy. His daddy had five women and 15 babies. And he wants to be just like his daddy and plant seeds, but he don't want to nurture the seeds. But he wants seeds all over the country. He wants two babies in Vegas. He wants three in Kansas City. He wants a few in Chicago. We got to stop that mentality, too.
Well, yeah. That's getting a hold to our men and our boys and says, look, God decided that if a man and a woman that's best to raise a child, we didn't decide something else. And it's deadly. It's killing us. It's keeping our kids in the streets without fathers. It's just bad all the way around. I'm divorced, and I had two children before I was married. And I got married. My husband wanted another one. He and I, you know, were together, and we later divorced. But all of them are grown now. And, you know, this late in the game where there's so much birth control, contraceptives coming up, and so many programs to try to reach the kids, I think one of the things that we need a campaign around, VJ, is – stop having babies until you're ready to have them. And we need to push this the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 25 years. You know what I'm saying? For men and for women to just get a campaign going to stop having babies. Because this is a mess. I mean, sometimes it's just so scary thinking about what tomorrow is going to bring. I have a strong faith, and I know God's will shall be done. But it's some things that we need to be doing. We need to be proactive in reaching these young boys and seeking out education and keeping them plugged in programs that keep them in an elementary mode until they, you know, get to an age where they understand this stuff.
Well, you know, I appreciate you calling because, matter of fact, we're helping you because these are less calories. The more you talk to us, the less calories you eat. You're like me, man. I'm trying to get myself in shape. So keep calling us and empowering us with your conversation. Thanks for giving us that nickname, the MDs. We're staying short for Mad Dads. In the house, we doctors of love, and we're passing it along. And thank you very much. And I look forward to talking to you next week, okay?
For real. Loving you.
All right, bye-bye. Now, you know, I'm going to tell you, that young lady, I really appreciate her. She has kind of gave us a nickname. Now, we also have a young lady that signed on. Now, I know she got something to say. Now, you know, this is Sarita, and she's on hold now. She's burning. She's burning.
She
done pushed the button.
Just came back from Chicago.
Oh, man. She pushed the button a long time ago, and she got something to say. Now, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to be nothing nice, but what I am going to say is she got something to say. Bring it on, Sister Sarita. Bring it on, baby.
Okay. I just got to say, I totally, totally agree with the last lady. But one of the things I do want to say is us as women have to take control of our own bodies. We cannot keep blaming these young men because half of these young men do not be wanting babies, and they make it clear that they want to be in the street doing whatever they want to do. So as a woman, we should control ourselves and stop having babies by knuckleheads that's not ready to take care of our children.
She sound like Sister Soldier.
I mean, because really, it is the truth, because I hear a lot of people blaming men all the time, and I don't go around blaming men for nothing, because I know this is my body. I control what a person does and does not do to me or with me. And it's the same with everybody. We have all these people. I have sisters that have 4 or 5 babies by men over and over again, and they knew these men didn't want to be with them and did not want to be a daddy for their children. Now you have 4 kids out here that don't have no daddies, and she's barely taking care of them because she's mad she ain't with none of the daddies. So whose fault is that? That's not those boys' fault. That's her fault. You know, that was her body, and she should have been able to calm that down and know, okay, this guy's in the streets. He's not trying to take care of me. He's not even trying to take care of himself. What are you going to do with a baby?
And, you know, one of the things is, though, Sarita, you know, we got to get – see, everybody – all women ain't as strong as you. You're a strong, determined woman, but you've been through some things that made you that way. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But now you're using those tools to stay strong. But a lot of women aren't even trying to be strong. Like, if a brother say, man, I don't want no babies. Well, okay, you're not even going to take the pill. You ain't going to do nothing. You're just going to keep having sex. And then you're going to use that as a tool to keep a brother that don't want you?
And it don't keep them. Haven't they said, it's no such thing as a keep a nigga baby. Excuse my language. That was a long time ago people was trying that. It didn't even work back then. It's not going to work now. I don't even see why these women don't understand. If he don't want to be there, he's not. You got men moving to different cities to get away from women. I mean, seriously. And that baby is not going to make him say, I feel strongly about this. If this man don't love you when you are with him and he's not showing that love that he'll bend over backwards for you, he's not going to do that for your child. So why have a baby? Now, if you have a man that's doing for you, he's bending over backwards, you know this is a good man. Okay, he deserves a baby, maybe. You know what I mean? Because he's proving himself. You know, these men don't even have to prove themselves. All they have to do is prove that they got a piece of thing up in their drawers, and these girls are having babies by them. And that's not cool. So really what we need is some kind of parenting group for these women. These boys, they need something too, but, I mean, seriously, if you ask me, they're making it clear. I've seen boys that make it clear and still women having babies by them.
Hey, you know, so, I really respect you. I really respect your frankness and your bluntness on how you're delivering that message. but you know, I really, really, really respect the way, you know, that you put it out there, because see, I think that women really need to hear that. And I heard something in there while you was talking that really excited me, and that was that women development group. I think women, black women, should have a group that's strictly women's orientated and facilitated, and so that those type of views and those type of statements and those type of experiences can be brought out into the open. Because I know one thing is coming, growing up in the black community and stuff, we're very secretive about our dysfunctionalities. You know what I'm saying? We always want the world to think that we're something else. When we're really in pain and we're really in suffrage, we're really in bondage, you know?
Yep, and
so
you know what else I've noticed?
Respect you calling into the show and voicing your opinion.
But here's another thing.
Okay.
I want to ask you something, because I want to get a woman's comment. If we're going to save our black boys, now you're a mother, and you know, you always take pride in the fact that your sons came out okay. But you know what? I bet there were some days and some times that you cried and you wished that them daddies had been closer to you or had been around on some instances. But on one case, I know for your daughter, daddy is around. But I bet there were times when you really wished that they had been closer to you.
Well, with my kids, you know, all my kids have the same dad. You know,
all 15 of them?
Hey, y'all don't listen to him. No, I have three.
Okay.
You know, they all have the same dad. And see, I knew he was a good person before I had kids by him, because he was taking care of me. He was bending over backwards for me. I knew a person like that couldn't dare walk away from their children. You know, whether he loved me or not, I knew he would have been there for his children. You know, but you know what? I want to say one more thing that I've noticed out here. I've noticed that when women are going through all that, like, messed up stuff, when they're going through with these men and they let men run over them, that men ain't taking care of their kids, they surround themselves with the same type of women. You know, so it's like they're not getting no kind of, they're getting all negative things. They're not getting positive reactions because they're around the same type of people that's doing the same dumb things. So if you have a crowd and all of y'all are being dumb, how are you going to smarten up? How are you going to know this is not right? How are you going to really know if you don't have no positive person around you talking to you and telling you? You don't.
You are absolutely right about that. You know, like I know, you know, you're a part of the group that goes with us over to Shiloh, that ERC thing. And we talked to that 15-year-old kid that's got the two babies coming.
Yeah.
He got the two babies by two different girls. And I remember the cockiness that he had when we first talked to him. And then after we got this, we shared those first 2 weeks of talking with him. You see how he done started changing his mind?
Yes, I do.
And, you know, see, I really feel, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, that what that energy that you poured into him and stuff, you know, that he really received that. And I think it's so much like you said that, you know, like today, women, you are, these young girls got to understand the power of the word no, the power of the word responsibilities, you know. And they got to stop putting so many emphasis on having somebody to say that they love them and truly love them. Because like that young girl said on the bus, you know, she say, I got two kids. My kids really love me. Don't know Ian really love me. And I was like, wow. You know, it kind of threw me for a flip when she said that, you know, because she was only 19 years old, you know what I'm saying, and she had two babies. You know, she said she had two babies because she wanted somebody to really love and need her. And I was like, wow. You know, it's really coming to that, you know?
That's right. See, and that's where the self-esteem and the confidence comes in, and the things that we got to teach our girls, too, because you know what? When you start telling yourself that you don't need no man and you have two boys, well, they're going to believe they don't need a daddy, and then they won't listen to the men. And when a man gets in their life and comes in their life and tries to show them something, they will not believe them because mama has already told you, don't listen to none of these N-words, you know, because they will not tell you.
You know, I had them little girls from that school one time tell me that daddies are a non-factor.
Yeah.
You know, and that couldn't have came from nobody but their mom, you know.
That came from that cafeteria lady.
Yeah, and see, that's not right to just say, because daddies are always a factor. You know, the moms don't tell the kids what they did and how this went for dad to not be around. Half the time it be because of these women. You out here, you jumping from man to man. You have a baby, and then the men don't want to accept the baby. You know, you don't tell your kid that, but you quick to tell your kid, you know, a daddy is non-factor and talk bad about them. But you don't tell them what you're doing out here. You know, they messing these little girls' heads up. And that's what's really going on. It's the people before these children that has ruined their lives. Now they're ruining the children's lives before they even have a chance.
The other thing that is destroying our black boys is the fact that there are so many people and so many fathers and mothers that have made a decision that they're going to be aligned up with gangs, leadership of gangs, that they're going to line up with that and that they believe in that and trust in that. And they tell their kids the same thing. Sarita, they tell their kids do the signs. If you look at them on Facebook, they're either folks or people. They all that, and these are mothers that are still doing this right now to today. And what I want to say is that we destroy our black boys when I see them go to jail, and they say, you know, my mama's in it, my daddy does it, I don't have no choice but to do it. When I get out, they're going, if I don't claim what I need to claim, I can't live, I can't survive in my own house. So I got to be down with them. And that's a problem for our community. That's a problem for us. That's a problem for mainly black boys.
Yes, it is. Now, that's a serious problem.
Now, Gil, you want to
talk about that? Well, you know, having been a prodigy man of that same analogy that you just put out, BJ, is that, when, you know, like, my father was a gang member. My mother wasn't a gang member, you know what I'm saying? She's just a supporter. But my father was a gang member and stuff, you know. And now that I can look back at it in retrospective, and now that I have the clarity of understanding what my father went through, is that the same actions that he took to become a gang member was the same type of social and home environment that he created me in order to force me to make a decision. And I thought that by joining the gang that I was going to somehow be able to control who became my brothers, you know?
Right.
Because, see, I didn't have a stable home life. I didn't really have a stable relationship with my brothers or my sisters because we were all inflicted up under the same type of brutal regime, which was my father. So when I got outside the home, and I started meeting guys in the streets that had my same type of social conditions, I readily ran to them, you know. I made myself accessible to these guys because all of us was dealing with the same thing. We all was dealing with alcoholic fathers. All of us was dealing with a father that was beating our mothers and stuff. All of us was dealing with that we didn't like to go home after school because there was nothing there. So, it was easy for me to lay up here and attach myself to those guys, you know. And I see those same type of social decisions being made and being confronted by young men today because we have so many single parent units that the basic needs of a male child is being neglected because the mom, you know, she's dealing with her own. You know, we got a lot of mental problems in our community.
Mm-hmm. We sure do, man.
And, you know, and we got a lot of educational deprivation problems in our communities. And when you don't have the necessary information to deal with these problems, you know, and you don't have the different resources available to you, or you don't have the opportunity to get to the resource because the resources are there, but we don't utilize these resources because we have been brought up in a culture where you don't tell. You know what I'm saying? You don't speak of the dysfunction in your family. So you just hold on to that, and you build on the information that you do have. Even if it's misinformation, you pass that on to your child by your acceptance of that misinformation. So your child comes up when it comes time, like the Bible says, you bring a child up in the way in which you want that child to go. So in order for that child to make a decision, when the time comes for him to make a decision, he has something to draw on. Our children don't have nothing to draw on today.
That's right. And with that said, 22 seconds left to go. You listen to Blog Talk Radio with VJ Smith and Gil Baggett.
Hello.
And I just want you to know, man, every Tuesday, I want to thank all my callers. Sarita, thanks for calling. I want to thank
you.
Brandon, thank you for calling, man. We appreciate you. And tune in every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Come to the support group. Sarita, be there on time. Bring the baby with you. 3023 4th Avenue South. We'll see you there.
And Sharon, you better call because I was talking this phone stuff and I'm listening all the time.
Okay, well, she on there?
Yeah.